Blog Talk Radio.
Well, normally we would have the intro here at Living and Thriving with Rusty, but unfortunately we're out camping and it's extraordinarily windy and the studio is not actually connecting with the Wi-Fi as quickly as normal. So we're going to have to pass the whole introductory song, which I miss because I love Leona. Leona Hosack at leonahosack.com. Check her out. She gave me an awesome service. We have an incredible day. Chloe and I are out camping. This is her first camping trip, and I actually did a luxurious camping trip in the sense that there's actually running water and bathrooms a walk away. We're on a lake. We're on the Piscataqua, and my friend here, Bob, is keeping the fires tended so that we can actually eat shortly. And so we're excited. We are thrilled to be doing this. I am trying to see if on, but the Wi-Fi is so dreadfully slow because of the wind. I can't even tell you if he's on or not. But I'm looking forward to talking to him. We spoke earlier today as I was trying to get the tent up and camping gear going. He's got a lot to offer us tonight at Living and Thriving. So let us hope that we can make this happen. Hold on 1 minute. All right. The campground has lost the battle of Wi-Fi, and it's because it's so incredibly windy. We're actually supposed to have a flood warning, and of course, Chloe and I are sitting right in front of a lake. But I'm okay with that. When you grow up in Miami, there's things that you're just okay with. And half the time it's baloney, and the other half of the time it's not. The beauty of where we live is we don't live in Miami right now. We live in New Hampshire, and it is stunning out. I can tell you the views, if you're on my Facebook account, it's amazing. Chloe and I are so happy. We were only going to do it for 2 nights, but she looked at me and she's like, we're doing it for a whole week. I said, all right, this is easy camping now. We have running water. This is not the kind of camping I'm used to. But she's good. She's absolutely good. So let's go to our sponsor, which is Asiya, Teresa, rock on sister. Love you. She's my sponsor for this month, as well as Lady Hawk Investigations, a private investigation firm. They're also going to be sponsoring my new radio show, Ask a PI, with David Jeshnu, who I just love and adore. He is my mentor as I'm furthering my education this fall in forensic psychology, going back to grad school. It's kind of scary, but exciting and scary and exciting. I'm getting old, but so if you have any investigative needs, feel free to dial 941-275-1920, and that's Lady Hawk Investigations. Now let's go to Teresa.
Hello.
Or not. Hi. How are you?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Unfortunately, I was trying to play the audio file for one of our sponsors, and Robert, it did not work out because I'm sitting here in the middle of a marshlands. It's actually like a brackish area in New Hampshire, and the wind is blowing so hard that the Wi-Fi is not effective. So I apologize, and her sponsorship, I will make it up later. So she will be sponsoring us in August as well. But I would love to introduce Robert Kopecky. He's an author. He is a lover of life. He's a survivor. He's a healer. He's healing. He's all about self-help. He's all about strength, death, love, men, man, dying, success. And it's just amazing because you have such an eclectic background like I do. And what I love is that you had a fear about dying, but then you did, and then you came back, or something like that. I don't know. You're going to tell us all about it. So let's enjoy the radical kindness, radical forgiveness process that you offer. So who are you, and what do you do?
Well, hi, Rusty. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And like you, I'm kind of out in the wilderness too. I'm on the Upper Delaware River right now, talking to the outdoors. My name is Robert Kopacki, and I am an author now at this point in my life. I just had a book published called How to Survive Life and Death, from Konari Press. And before that, for many, many years, I was an illustrator, a pop illustrator and an animation designer for kids' TV shows, mostly. I still do design animation, but I also write a blog and am kind of all over the Internet in a lot of spiritual places right now. I find myself becoming a spiritual teacher, which is a pretty interesting change for me, but very exciting, and I'm very grateful for it.
Very cool, and I'm so glad that we found each other, because you have a very intriguing story, which is similar to mine, but everybody's bored with my life. So let's talk about what did you want to be as a child?
You know, as a child, I wasn't really certain exactly. I was a little puzzled by the world. I grew up with an alcoholic father, it was kind of a chaotic childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I had kind of an oddly mystical childhood. There were lots of people from other countries coming through our house, and I started traveling at a very young age. Kind of as soon as I could drive, I took it on the road, and I grew up in San Diego, right across the border from Mexico, and I started heading down into Mexico, and I kind of started exploring. You know, I started traveling around the American West and stuff, and I discovered that I could draw very well when I was a kid. I didn't have to learn. And even though I may have tried some other businesses for a little while, I was always able to earn a living by my artwork. And so I became an illustrator and a designer. I went to school in Los Angeles for that. And I grew up basically drawing and painting to make a living. But I still had this kind of, searching thing. I was always looking for what it was all about, you know, what it all meant. I can remember being just 5 or 6 and standing in the backyard of my father's house and thinking, what is all this about? What are we doing here? You know, which may be a little unusual for a kid that age. I don't know. There's probably a lot of us. But I didn't know I was going to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer when I was in high school, but everything kind of led me away from that. And I didn't really start writing again until about 6 years ago or so. I had an animation blog that I put a lot of animation artwork on, of shows that I was working on, and I started, I just kind of got this calling to start writing. I took up a spiritual practice and started meditating a lot about 10 years ago or so, and after 4 or 5 years of that, I just kind of got this urge to start writing about spirituality. I'd done a lot of studying, a lot of sort of book learning on different texts and authors and stuff, and I started posting those to my art blog, and people started to respond to that more than the art. So up here on the Upper Delaware, where I like to sit by the river in the morning and meditate, I kind of got a calling to write about these three experiences that I'd had in the course of my life and my travels, what are commonly called near-death experiences. And I did have three of them, all different from one another. And I can't recommend that as a means to self-realization. I would avoid it if I were you. But it did teach me certain things about some of the answers, what I think some of the answers about life are, what's going on here. And, I put pen to paper and ended up with a publisher interested, and that's how my book, How to Survive Life and Death, came into being here. Was published in April.
Very cool. I have as well. I've been stabbed. I've been shot at. I've had cancer 3 times. I can do everything but running over my dog with a truck in regards to this little country song.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it sounds a little like a country song.
So I absolutely can relate wholeheartedly to your journey. What I love about having you on the show is that you were able to articulate your journey and appreciate it as much as I do. So, for example, there are individuals on this plane who have such a negative construct. And I think that 20 years ago, I would have been really angry and annoyed with those people. But having those near life, near death, near life, depends on, you know, half full glass versus half empty. I really look at them going, wow, you're really on a great journey. Like, I accept the journey for what it is, which
right.
I don't think most people have that opportunity or understanding. And it's a very clear line when you
right.
go through severe trauma. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think if you're anything like I was, you may have been one of those people at some point. I know I was.
Oh,
I was like very egoic, you know, I was ambitious. I didn't think about other people so much. I thought that I was, you know, a fairly principled guy, but it was somewhat theoretical to me, all of that. I just kind of went about my own thing and trying to get people to know who I was and to be noticed and to be, you know, quote-unquote successful kind of thing. And it really wasn't until I got my butt kicked numerous times, you know. The first one was a car accident, and I had an out-of-body experience where I saw the scene, I witnessed the scene. The second one, I was leading a riotous lifestyle, and I just had a toxic situation happen, and I found myself in the middle of a white cloud, basically, looking at scenes from my life. You know, that it was that near-death experience where they weren't necessarily best of the greatest hits kind of scenes. They were these oddly pivotal, kind of seminal, meaningful moments in my life that I may not have paid close enough attention to. And, you know, I'd learned that I was a spirit and basically riding around in this body in the first one. I learned that there is kind of this record of things in the second one. And then in the third one, I got beaten up by a gang of skinheads in Arizona. I was living in Arizona.
Shut the front door. Really?
Yeah, yeah. One of them assaulted me when I was on the telephone talking to my fiancé at the time. And I calmed him down, but then he came back and reached in and hung up the phone and started pushing me and was hollering epithets in my face and stuff. And I made a terrible mistake. It taught me a great lesson about using violence to try to solve anything. I punched the guy, and he went down, and I made good my escape, and I didn't realize that there were about a dozen of these skinheads watching the whole thing.
Oh, my good gravy.
And they knocked me out from behind with something. I didn't even see it coming, and then I guess, according to the police report, they stomped and kicked me for like an hour or something, right? And in that near-death experience, I struggled. I didn't want to come back. But the message was that I had to, that I hadn't left appropriately, that there were things that I needed to do here, you know? And I'm not a real, you hear it called woo-woo a lot these days, you know, by my nature.
Yeah,
I was always kind of like a regular guy. I was always open to a lot of spiritual ideas and stuff, but I had never really experienced them. And when I had these near-death experiences, I still didn't really get the message so much. It wasn't until I came to a place in my life that I think a lot of people need to come to, and it is their karma. So they may be jerks like I was. They may have had lessons given to them that were very valuable about the spirituality that's inherent in our being on this planet, but not have seen it, not have realized it. But then there comes that moment, which is the dark night of the soul, so to speak, you know, when you confront everything that isn't working anymore. And that's what happened to me. Everything I thought I was, everything I thought I had attained in my life wasn't real. And I needed to confront that one day. And around that time, I just kind of did an about-face. And I was old. I was in my late 40s when that happened, you know. And from that moment on, then, I started to see the world a little different way, and I began meditating. I began a more spiritual lifestyle. That's when I started to really seek out the answers and stuff. And when the experiences that I had had, the three near-death experiences, really crystallized in my life for me. And, you know, I was able to see this construct, this egoic construct that I have, and that is the nature of being a human being. You know, in this form, people generally are kind of self-centered and are thinking about their world. They kind of feel like you're at the center of the world. And it isn't until something knocks you out of that perspective that you're able to realize that you're part of a much smaller thing that's intensely magical, you know, that's intensely miraculous, and that everybody else is, and that everybody else is on their own path struggling with how difficult this life can be. And they all deserve a kindness, forgiveness. That's my three tips for happiness, right? Radical kindness, radical forgiveness, and the third tip is radical surrender to this amazing system, this invisible spiritual mechanism that we're all part of, that carries us along on our trip. How's that
That's
sound?
Pretty cool. So this is, that was pretty cool. Give us, we're at the 13-minute mark, which is halfway, a little over halfway but in the show. Give us an idea of how we can reach you and find you and learn more about your book and your book title. That's always nice.
Oh, well, you can go to robertkopecky.blogspot.com. That's my blog. It's called Art, Faith, and the Coco Lion, and maybe I'll describe that, why it's called that, at some other time. Why my book is called what it is, How to Survive Life and Death, is going back and forth with the publisher. And the publisher added on a guide for happiness in this world and beyond. So that's the subtitle of it, which wasn't my idea, but I guess it works. What the heck? You know, I really am kind of dishing out some, I think, pretty good advice that I definitely learned the hard way, but that really can make life easier and really improve the experience quite a bit. I think the radical kindness that I propose to people, I like to give as a challenge, where basically you just try it for a day or two and you be absolutely as nice to everybody as you can be. Everybody that you meet in every situation, you're as kind to them as possible without being sarcastic or, you know, without gossiping or anything like that. Just sincerely, authentically kind, and it will really change your experience of the world. I guarantee it. You suddenly begin to feel like you're part of a conspiracy of kindness, like there's a secret society of really nice people out there that are there to help one another, and you become part of that. You know? And then the forgiveness, which we were talking about a little bit earlier, really, the radical forgiveness, really comes from the fact that everybody is struggling with being in this life. It's not an easy thing. And, you know, as you get older, there are more and more difficult things, including people dying around you. I'm here to tell you that death is not a final thing, that consciousness continues after this. I experienced it as easily as stepping from one room to another on three different occasions. And so even though I may have been a skeptic or a doubter in my earlier life, I have absolutely no doubt about that now. And so people don't need to have, you know, as intense of fears about that aspect of dying as they might have had. The surrender thing I like to talk about is more like surrendering in a blissful way rather than giving up. You know, it's not the pejorative aspect of it. It's surrendering in kind of a blissful way. And you look at the evidence in your life and you're still here and everything is okay, and it's really carrying you along in what could be kind of scripted when you look back at it. So you can just have faith that what has worked for you in your life is going to continue working for you. And sometimes you go through rough patches, and then you get into great parts of it, And that usually means there's another rough patch coming up, and that usually means there's going to be another great part coming. So that's
well,
the way
I think. I think one of the things that we tend to forget is throughout our journey, we are such a hustle and bustle fast food society, and we're so narcissistic and filled with hypocrisy in the sense that we work our 9 to 10 job. You know, and we put the kids through every single occasion that we possibly can, and we forget to communicate, and we forget to do this, and we forget to do that, and we don't take care of ourselves, and we have every excuse that possibly can be made, and we have every electronic advice, you know, that possibly can be made. I was talking to somebody tonight, because I'm an avid camper. I love camping. And he's like, oh, yeah, there's new solar panels for your backpack. And I'm going, seriously? I don't want my cell phone to work. Which is
right.
Cool. I'm good with that.
Right.
I'm not going to do that. But the temptation is there. I'm like, really? We could watch Netflix on the top of, you know, and it's wrong. I just,
yeah.
It's wrong, but it's kind of like sexy. It's like, oh,
Well, that's the thing. You know, this is a sensory, it's a sensory experience, right? It's a sensory world.
Absolutely.
Our skin is for feeling, our taste buds are for tasting, our eyes are for seeing. We experience life in human form, and it's great, and it's wonderful, and
it's
can
amazing.
Be very addictive. However,
yep.
If you become too attached to just this kind of gratification in a sensory way, then you become very self-centered, and it can be rather confusing. You end up with things that come and go too quickly for you, things that you expected to be the solution to things that aren't the solution, and that kind of stuff, you know. The pain and pleasure all only lasts for a little while. What my message is that there are these principles that underlie all of this, like love, for example, being the main one, that everything that's wonderful and lasting in your life is created from, grows out of, is formed by your passion for something or somebody, showing up for other people. When we become very involved in just ourselves and just what our sensory experiences are and what our fears may be, whether they're real or not, then life can be a very difficult thing. But if we kind of open up and release ourselves to this kind of magical, wonderful flow of stuff that's happening and don't get so so wrapped up in having, you know, a certain look or having things feel a certain way or expecting things to end up a certain way, then, you know, you can be this, not detached in a cold way, but detached in a very comfortable and realistic way where you can actually be present for life in a better way and for other people too, you know.
So in the last 4 minutes, Robert, can you give us an understanding of maybe 3 components of your book that would actually be something useful and doable, and they're able to duplicate in regards to over 200,000 fans internationally? Give about 4 minutes, no pressure.
well, I mean, certainly one of these things is that what we're here for is to recognize the eternal in one another. That if we're looking at all the stuff that changes and, you know, kind of the world of gossip, the world of surfaces, that it's going to be difficult and not very rewarding, not very fulfilling. But if we're looking, especially in our relationships, in our personal relationships, if you're willing to overlook kind of the surface faults and the like that every human being has and recognize the eternal within each person and each form of life, you know, and everything in this world, then the world opens up in a really amazing way and becomes much more available to you, I think. Another thing would be the practice of meditation, which I can't stress too much. It just is such an amazing way to work this life, because it does two things for you. It allows you to become a witness to your thoughts, right? You can sit and learn to become a witness to your thinking organ, which is your brain, which is incessantly running off these thoughts in a serial fashion. Lots of times, any bad experience we're having is because we're thinking bad thoughts over and over and over. But when you sit in meditation, you can get that perspective. You can become a witness to that thinking. And you can become whoever that is who's watching it. You know, everybody says, I don't even want to think about it. You know, I don't even want to think about that. And then you don't. Who are you? And who is it that was thinking about it, right? You can divorce yourself from having to be a slave to those thoughts all the time. The other thing, the third thing, would definitely be the recognition of love as the medium of life, really. It's the medium of life, I think. And I'm not talking about material life, about the sort of superficial life, but about this this underlying spiritual life, where money or fame or looks might be the medium of material life. Love is the medium of a spiritual evolution. You know, so when we follow, you know, love, it makes food taste better, right? It makes clothes look better. It makes your experience of every moment improve if you're investing it with love. So you follow that. You follow its lead. When it's showing you a place that you need to be or a person that you need to help or a way that you need to cook something for somebody else with love, then you take part in your life that way, and it isn't like anything else. It'll change everything for you and improve it greatly. Was that 4 minutes?
What I find fast, actually you have about 1.5 minutes left, but what
wow.
I find fascinating about your journey is that you are extremely articulate in the good side of it, but you have not actually dabbled into what transpired to shove you into the understanding that there is, you know, you're going to skin your knees, and I talk about it almost every single show, and they're going to bleed, and they're going to scab over, and they're going to hurt, and you're going to have ice packs, maybe even stitches.
Yeah, and what it boils down to for me, Rusty, is that's how life is. That's what that's what happens in this life. You get your heart broken, you get your knees scun, you get you get disappointments. Those things happen, and I don't really go into a lot of those because everybody knows about those stuff in painful detail. You know?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
You can sit in it and live it over and over and over again, and that can define your life. What I'm trying to pass on are the means to avoid that, or the means to, you know, step around it. It's there, but if you're going through hell, keep going, because you can get out on the other side and be in heaven, any place you are, any place you find yourself.
Well,
it really
it's all
is
about attitude. I think it's all about attitude. I have recently, you know, skinned my knees, and I'm moving forward because it's the only direction you really can go, because even if you self-wallow, you still have to get up. At some point, you have to get up and go pee, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, the very basic need of human nature. It's really conveying that understanding that no matter what you do, you still move forward. You don't have a choice. You can't move backwards. We're not Doctor Who, even though he was kind of cool back when I was a kid.
Right.
The new one, not so much. Just saying.
Well, here's a way to think about surrender too in that regard,
yeah,
of moving forward. Is that when everything is going really great, I just want to point out that you are completely surrendered. You are surrendered to life when everything is going great, and you don't notice, because everything's going great, right? It's not a problem. When things are going terrible, when awful things are happening to you, then every moment is grindingly painful, and then it feels like you must be able to do something. You must be able to take control of this mess, right? But the
Which is the dichotomy that we have such a struggle with, is that we think we can control it, and we can't.
Right.
And
you can't.
Our
ego
is so huge, it's such a big baby that... oh my God, you and I could talk forever.
You're still being carried, you know? You're still being carried. That's my point. And the same mechanism that carries you when things are going great is carrying you when they're not going great, and you'll get through it that way.
That's true. Robert, give us quickly, we have about 4 seconds to shamelessly plug yourself. Do it now.
Well, the book is called How to Survive Life and Death. I have an author page on Facebook. My last name is Kopecky. Kopecky, And my it's robertkopecky.blogspot.com, where I write a lot.
All right, my friend, big hugs to you. We are we've got probably about 30 seconds left, but I am so thrilled, and I'm going to reach out to you to have you on again so that we can get more into depth in regards to this process in your book. And I just feel like there's another book coming. I don't know that for a fact, but...
Well, one thing at a time.
I mean,
it would be great, Rusty. It's a lot of fun to talk to you. I would really enjoy talking to you about this more.
Awesome. Awesome. So definitely hold that space. We will do that in 2015 because, as you know, I'm booked actually till 2017, but there's a couple of openings, so we'll make that happen.
Well, if somebody can't make it, give me a call because I'm always good in a pinch, you know?
If you're good in a pinch, we're on. All right, my dear. Robert Kopecky, I love you. Give your title of your book again, and we've got to go.
It's How to Survive Life and Death, A Guide for Happiness
Amen,
in
bro.
This World and Beyond. I love you too, Rusty.
Amen.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
That was Robert Kopecky, and definitely check out his book. Unfortunately, Chloe and I are at a campground with my friend Bob and my baby Bella.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.